In 1853, Commodore Matthew Perry of the U.S. Navy sailed his famous black ships into Tokyo Bay. Japan had been closed to the outside world for 2 centuries, and the challenge he presented to the Japanese was simple: open your doors or we'll open them for you. Of course, Japan did open up and eventually became the world's second-largest economy. But in recent years, something of the isolationism of earlier centuries returned, and Japan's economy sputtered. Many say the so-called lost decade of the 1990s was the result of Japan's unwillingness to change and open up again.
Now the economy seems to be moving once more, and that may be due to a change in attitude. Today, in the first of a 2-part series on changing Japan, NPR's Rob Gifford reports on the Japanese economy and how the recession caused a fundamental change in the Japanese psyche.
As economic hangovers go, this was a bad one. The go-go years of the 1980s gave way to more than a decade of stagnation in Japan. Now, though, the headlines are saying the hangover is over and the Japanese economy is growing again. Perhaps the poster child of the recovery is carmaker Nissan. It's launch day for the new Nissan Fuga. The company's newest luxury sedan is rolled out with lights and music. 5 years ago, Nissan was losing market share and billions of dollars when French automaker Renault took a gamble and bought a controlling stake in the company. The man given the task of turning Nissan round was Brazilian-born, French-educated CEO Carlos Ghosn.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Over the past 5 years, Nissan has renewed or expanded its offers in every vehicle segment, from compacts to minivans, from sports cars to sedans of every class.
Ghosn now has an almost godlike status in Japan for what he's done at Nissan. The company last year made $4.6 billion in profit. How did he do it? In Western terms, the steps seem fairly basic, but in Japan, they were revolutionary. He closed factories, and, shock horror, in the land of lifetime employment, he cut jobs. On top of that, says executive vice president of Nissan, Norio Matsumura, he brought a whole new way of thinking to the company.
He restructured the mindset of the people in Nissan. He gave us the brave mind, the mind of freedom, you know, this kind of things, which changed the total company quite drastically.
Restructuring the mindset of anyone in Japan has never been an easy thing to do. In the 1980s, everyone wanted to learn from the Japanese. In the 90s, though, the Cold War ended, the internet emerged, the world changed. But somehow, Japan didn't. The country seemed burdened and slowed down by the weight of its past success. It's taken a decade, and in Nissan's case, a foreigner at the helm, to finally make some of the painful structural changes that many now say are giving Japan a new start.
You're witnessing a true renaissance in Japan.
Chief economist at Merrill Lynch in Tokyo, Jesper Kohl, believes Japan is changing profoundly.
Ruling elite, whether that is bankers, whether that is politicians, bureaucrats, or corporate managers, right? They have recognized that Japan is in danger of becoming a second or third-rate power if it doesn't change, if it doesn't find a new hybrid model.
And that economic hybrid, says Kohl, which Nissan represents, is helping to redefine Japan in the 21st century. Kohl compares it to the Meiji Restoration, the period in the mid-19th century when Commodore Perry and the West first arrived, and Japan decided to embrace Western ways in order to make itself strong. It's opening up its market to other big Western companies, such as Walmart, and allowing more competition than before, even in previously sacrosanct market sectors. A massive food expo is taking place in a cavernous exhibition hall in central Tokyo. 24-year-old Hidechika Akiba is chatting with some clients. The youthful-looking Akiba-san looks a little out of place in his ill-fitting suit and slightly shaggy haircut. 10 years ago, he would have been completely out of place in a corporate Japan that did not embrace the bottom-up culture of little-guy entrepreneurialism. But Akiba now represents a new and growing type of young, independent businessman. He makes a living buying and selling that most sacred of Japanese commodities, rice, a sector previously closed to small businesses. And he does it on the internet. recession has been crucial, he says, in giving young people a different mindset to the salarymen of previous generations.
Lots of people in my generation are setting up businesses now. I even give lectures at universities about setting up your own business. I get three times as many people in the audience as the professors get for their classes.
Such changes are now allowing young Japanese people to define their own lives, rather than society defining their lives for them. And if there's more freedom now to succeed on your own, there's also more freedom to not succeed at all. Shinichi Yoshimoto was for 5 years a salaryman. He joined a large firm straight from college and worked 15 to 18 hours every day, but he says he felt imprisoned. Yoshimoto now works in a bar, wears his hair long, and typifies a new breed of educated Japanese, what he unashamedly calls a loser, someone who has stepped off the career treadmill voluntarily. Being a loser, he says, gives him freedom to be himself, something that the legions of his contemporaries, who still work as salarymen, know nothing about.
They don't know what happy means. They don't know real happiness. They don't know. Yeah, Japanese don't know real happiness.
The psychological changes taking place in Japan are by no means set in stone, and by no means yet the mainstream. Some analysts say recent economic growth will not last, pegged as it is mainly to the surge in exports. But the very fact that some Japanese are starting to talk about the pursuit of happiness, something Americans have taken for granted for centuries, shows that profound changes are underway in the world's second largest economy. Rob Gifford, NPR News, Tokyo.